end of the world is nigh. A cataclysm is coming, and Azeroth will never be the same again. This is a final voyage through the old world. And these are the many wonders you'll see.
Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Postcards from the Old World. The cataclysm is almost upon us and we only have a little bit of time left for our last great tour of the kingdoms of Azeroth before they are changed forever in the upcoming shattering. I'm Arezzo.
I'm Crashing.
And today we are going to be looking at two zones and a little bit of a geographical landmark between them in the Eastern Kingdoms. We're going to be in Searing Gorge and Burning Steps. Two areas mostly known, I think, for how hot and red and volcanic they are, and there are some very specific reasons buried in the history of Warcraft that explain why that should be the case. And so, as we did last time, in order to set the scene for these regions, we're going to start out with our little look at the world from the Alliance point of view, courtesy of Baera, who's going to go into the background, the history, and a little bit of the fun and games that the Alliance have in Searing Gorge and Burning Steps.
After the expulsion of the Dark Iron Dwarves from Ironforge, the sorcerer Tharason led them to the Red Ridge Mountains to build a new home. His desire to subjugate all dwarves to his rule led to the disastrous War of the Three Hammers. Defeated, Tharason realized that he had merely united the other dwarf clans against him, so he used his dark magic to summon allies from the elemental plane. Ragnaros, Lord of the Fire Elementals, had languished there since the Titans banished the old gods and their elemental servants from Azeroth. As he burst forth into the world, the land convulsed, and Blackrock Mountain heaved into existence. Parts of Kasmodan and the Red Ridge Mountains burned, becoming the Searing Gorge and the Burning Steps. Tharason died in the apocalypse, but not even he could have controlled Ragnaros. The Dark Iron Dwarves have fallen under the control of the Elementals and bring them captives as slave labor to work the mines and the slag pits. One group of the Dark Irons refused to serve Ragnaros. One of the ancient craft guilds, the Thorium Brotherhood, managed to escape Blackrock Mountain. Since they have learned to craft the materials indigenous to the region, they have remained in the Searing Gorge, working from their base camp at Thorium Point. While most quests in the zone are fairly straightforward, there are a few Alliance quests that seem a bit odd. Dark Iron Dwarves have overrun the explorer's dig site known as Grimsilt. Only two of the original archaeologists remain in the area, a very frightened dwarf named Lockheed, who will only communicate with you from the safety of an outhouse, and the injured Dorius Stone Tender. Dorius will ask you to help him escape, but don't put too much effort into it because he's going to get shot and die anyway. A note that you'll find on his body will reveal that an evil being by the name of Latharic the Black has taken control of a powerful and dangerous artifact and has used it to enslave Dorius's excavation team, whom he begs you in the note to rescue from the cauldron. After hoofing it back to his brother in Ironforge, chasing down cultists, and taking a couple trips into the slag pit, you'll find that you've been had. Latharic the Black is, in fact, Dorius, who faked his own death and planned this elaborate ruse to gain control of the Suntara Stones, which of course means you get to kill him. The other quest chain that I find odd is one that involves a mountaineer named Pebblebitty, who wants the horn of a bad-tempered thunder lizard named Margal. Once you've gotten the horn, Pebblebitty refuses to believe that you actually killed Margal, and you'll have to run back and forth between Searing Gorge and Ironforge to get the horn authenticated. Now here's the rub. After all that, your reward is the key to Stonerot Pass, the passage between Searing Gorge and Lochmoden that would have made it so much easier to get into Ironforge in the first place if you'd only had it sooner. Beyond Searing Gorge, most roads lead to Black Rock Mountain. The Burning Steps have very few quests that can actually be completed in the zone, in comparison with those that require you to go to Black Rock Mountain. At Morgan's Vigil, you'll find a somewhat shell-shocked dwarf named Aurelius, who will stop conversing with his imaginary friend just long enough to send you out ogre hunting. Also, the Royal Historian of Ironforge will send you to the Ruins of Thorisin to recover some relics. As you come in contact with the relics, ghostly voices will begin recounting impressions of the last moments of Thorisin as Ragnaros laid waste to the city. You have to wonder whether Aurelius' madness might have begun in the same way.
Okay, one thing that I will say is Ragnaros might be the guy that you will call if you want to try to take over the world, not necessarily the guy I would call to decorate my house, because...
I can't imagine what you mean.
Yeah, not much for the interior, not much for the decorating, not much for the beauty, I wouldn't say. The main thing about these two zones that we're going to go into today, and like she sort of alluded to, it really almost feels like one zone separated by a gigantic volcano.
Yeah.
To me, these two zones. That was the main thing when I went back through them this to do this podcast. I noticed that they geographically look very, very similar. A lot of similar features. A lot of the monsters and such are the same. So I think it's interesting that it feels like there's this one big zone that got taken up by, you know, all of a sudden there was this volcano came crashing out of the Earth's core, and now we've got two separate zones.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree. They feel like, except in some kind of interesting detail ways, when you really kind of get under the surface and start questing in them and exploring them, that, you know, the kind of the tone is different, and some of the things that you can do there are different, but in terms of the overall space and the geography and the feel, it's almost impossible. If you dumped me blindfold in the middle of either one of these zones, you know, it would take me really scouting around a little bit to work out which of them I was in. They don't really feel terribly different from each other.
It would take me looking at the map, to be honest with you.
Well, you see, that's just cheating, and I wouldn't be cheating.
Funny story about that. To be honest, when I was reviewing these zones again for this, you know, I got to one or the other. I don't actually know which one it was, and I looked around. I, you know, scouted around. Then I got on the Griffin or the taxi service, and I took it over to the other zone. Now, while I was doing that, I got up and I went to get a drink. And when I came back, I couldn't remember if I'd hit go or not, because the two zones looked so similar. I had to check the map to find out if I was in the right place or not.
Oh, that's bad.
One thing, though, that is, you know, the feel of these zones is sort of death and destruction. And in that regard, it works. I mean, they feel like devastated zones. It ties very much into the lore. You feel like, okay, something terrible happened here, and something terrible is still happening here.
Yes.
I think in our notes, that was the one thing that a lot of people mentioned over and over again about these zones, is that they feel dangerous.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And you're right. In a way, even more so than the Blasted Lands, these feel like zones that have been devastated. That, you know, for all that, obviously, it's entirely possible that... That this is always how they've been. In actual fact, once you start looking at it and you see places like the ruins in Burning Steps and things, it's very clear that actually once upon a time this wasn't like this, that something's happened to it, and that devastation, that kind of the scar that that these two zones represent across that middle part of the Eastern Kingdoms isn't, you know, like the scene of a natural disaster, although in this case in the history it's more an unnatural disaster. And you know, one of the things, or a couple of points that were made, we've invited members of our guild, Alia Iacta Est on Earth and Ring, in the US, to make some contributions, to offer some thoughts, to tell us how they feel about these zones. And a few people actually said things that they felt applied to both of them. And Tandoro had one of them, which kind of rang a bell with me. Tandoro says, "My strongest memory of here is flying over them on the flight from Stormwind to Ironforge as a new player and seeing all the cool stuff, especially the Altar of Storms in Burning Steps." Now, I remember that exact same experience because, you know, as previously established on previous shows, my first few characters were on the Alliance side. And that flight path from Stormwind to Ironforge, or vice versa, takes you right over some of the most exciting looking stuff, that like the Altar of Storms and all that area around Dracodar in the Burning Steppes, where there are dragons flying around and stuff like that. Now, because this is, you know, because the two cities are connected by the Deep Run tram, it's possible to get between them without having to kind of do a land-based run, which means that it's very, very possible that you'll first see these zones from the flight path connect when you fly back between one and the other. Now, to that low-level character that I was, that flight was just the most exciting thing in the game. These zones just looked like I will never in a million years be able to, you know, to wander around there, to explore there, to feel safe there, because it all looked so unbelievably challenging and scary, and that, you know, flying over the Altar of Storms it just gives you a moment of real, you know, real nervousness.
I can understand that. I mean, I could see where that you feel like almost like a kid pressing his face up against the glass of a candy store, not being allowed to go in too, because you're right, everything in the zone is such a high level. I could see where it's almost like a carrot and a stick type thing, showing you the carrot at some point in the game. Perhaps you can come here, little adventurer, if once you grow up, and you know. So that's kind of a neat. The game does that in a couple places, actually. It flies you over, for whatever reason, areas where you have no business being. And I think that's a nice little kind of preview of things come that they built into it.
Yeah,
I don't know
totally
if they did it
agree.
Intentionally or not, but if they, I'm sure they probably did. Most things, I suspect, are fairly intentional.
I definitely think so. I remember a long time ago when, you know, before either of us had been into those zones, Gaffoni and I talking about the fact that that tease that those flight paths offer of these zones in particular is one of those really clever things that Blizzard built into the game in order, we assumed, to make, you know, the world that we were about to kind of embark outwards into seem that bit scarier and that bit more challenging than, you know, the relatively safe starting zones, low level zones that we were coming from. And I think it does that incredibly effectively. Zug said something similar, although from the Alliance, from the Horde side. My first glimpse of these zones were in flight, after getting the Badlands flight path, so around level 40, and I would find myself flying back and forth over this zone, always looking down and mousing over the various mobs when they came into view. The Charred Mountain is surrounded by an ashen wasteland, and molten hot magma streams through here and there to give these zones a unique kind of devastation or oppressive force to be reckoned with. Other zones may have a terrific atmosphere or have great lore, but these zones feel truly epic. There are three words that come to mind when travelling through Searing Gorge and Burning Steppes at level: doom, dread, and death. Which, honestly, I cannot find it in my heart to disagree with. And Lachesis made the point that all three outposts in these zones, Thorian Point and the two in the Steppes, seem chosen because of their defensibility, which further emphasises the dangerous nature of these areas. So I think, overall, you know, the two zones offer a very daunting prospect at level, certainly, to the unwary adventurer who wanders in here, and I'll talk a bit later on about unwary adventurers wandering into one of these zones. But let's get into a little bit more detail. We'll start off looking at one of these zones in particular. We'll start with Searing Gorge. Gaffoni's going to give us a little intro, and then we will start digging into our own experiences there.
The vast lava chambers under Blackrock Mountain extend everywhere beneath the gorge, creating a hostile landscape of magma flows and volcanic vents, challenging even to the hardiest of the creatures making it their home. The huge dark iron mining effort in the cauldron adds to the risk, not only from the dwarves themselves, but also from what they have unearthed. The ancient secrets of the land are not easily uncovered, as many an explorer has found to their cost.
On the boards, Lachesis had a comment about Searing Gorge and Burning Steppes, and it's something we're going to go back to later, but he said, "The Gorgon's counterpart, the Steppes, both feel very dangerous, and I like that. There's no place in WoW that makes me feel more like I'm on an epic Dungeons & Dragons crawl than these two zones in the mountain stronghold that connects them." I want to come back to that later when we talk a little bit more about Blackrock Depths, but I think that's an interesting point that points back again to the feel that these are one zone separated by a major geographical, you know, obstacle, this major dungeon that's smack dab in the middle of them.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most interesting thing about these zones is you feel like, you said earlier, you feel like this was something else before something terrible happened. And that's really the feel that I get all the time. You've got the gigantic statues and stuff like that. And I think Lachesis's comment speaks directly to that.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing I find, I mean, I agree with that whole, the whole D&D feel. And obviously, you know, there's something very, very D&D about all the stuff going on in Blackrock Mountain. But But I think yes, as you said, it definitely feels like there's an impact of that earlier game design kind of comes through into the zones here and into the game generally. I think from my point of view, when you come to Searing Gorge, the interesting thing about that kind of first experience of it is actually it's one of those zones, I think, that it feels like, actually, it's like when we were talking about the Badlands. It feels like there's stuff that could be happening all over the place. There isn't, you know, obviously there's Thorium Point and there's lots of quests and stuff you can be given there, but it doesn't feel in the same way as some other zones that there's like one big hub from which you constantly run, you know, out and back, out and back, out and back. It feels like as you go round this zone, there are things to do and things to pick up in all sorts of places. And that's not actually necessarily the factual reality of where the zones quests are distributed and stuff like that. It's simply, I think, to do with the fact that it's one of those zones that has a lot of nooks and crannies, and that gives you the sense that as you go around it, you're properly exploring and you might find something interesting in any one of those nooks or crannies. That's my kind of feel for it. And if you take that into the Dungeons and Dragons model, it's kind of that sense of, oh, here be wandering monsters.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the zone design, I think, is that for a zone with lack of trees, lack of, you know, foliage of any kind, they still manage to make it so you can go over a ridge and all of a sudden there's stuff there that you couldn't see, you know. Yeah. It's a very up and down zone in terms of, you know, well, there's obviously the cauldron in the center of it, which is literally kind of a searing gorge. It's got all sorts of stuff going on down in it. And so you go in and out of this gap in the middle of the zone, this scar. And, you know, you go around a little corner, just a couple hills, and all of a sudden there's stuff there. So they did a good job of making what could have been sort of a dull zone, quite frankly, interesting, just by the way they used the terrain, I thought.
Yeah, true. And the other thing about you can't really talk about Searing Gorge without talking about the gorge.
Right.
This is one of those zones that has a big geographical feature. Well, obviously, we touched on the big geographical feature that separates this zone from the one to its south. But there is a big geographical feature which effectively separates half of this zone from the other half of this zone, which is the cauldron, Searing Gorge itself. As one of those spaces that defines, as one of those geographical features that defines a zone, it serves a brilliant purpose. It really does totally dominate every aspect of play around this zone. You know, to get from one side of the zone to the other, you have to go around it. There are no bridges directly across. If you go down into the bottom of it, you can go all the way along the bottom and then back up the other end. But even then, it's going to take you as long to get down there and back up as it would to go around it. It's so dominant that there are even ways into it, you know, from other points than in the cauldron itself, because I think really, really well creates this sense that, as well as the canyon, the cauldron, there is this great network of caves and tunnels that interconnects underneath the surface. So in a sense, it almost feels like this is two separate, vertically separated zones for the price of one.
Yeah, I think that's completely accurate. And that's, for me, is what makes it interesting, which turns a zone, which, like I said, could be kind of dull, quite frankly, into one that's a lot more interesting. That and one of the quest hubs, if you will. Like you said, there's a Thorium Point, I guess, and there's a couple of traditional type quest hubs, but there's also, like you said, in this zone, spread out all over the place, or it feels like it, a lot more interesting little tiny quest hubs, and one of them being the guy in the outhouse. I guess it's a guy, honestly.
I was going to talk about it as well, but I knew you would. Yeah, how can you not talk about the guy in the outhouse?
Yeah, I think this was the on the board. I think this is the quest hub, if you will, that the guildmates talked about the most. For example, who was it? Velvet, I think, talks about how there's an outhouse in the southeast corner of the zone with a few quests you can do. Looking back on it now, and I agree with this completely, he says, looking back on it now, it was probably some sort of omen for Blizzard's later obsession with poo and outhouse-related quests.
The signs were always there.
They always were. There's somebody on the quest development team at Blizzard who is on the fifth grade level, which I completely appreciate because I am too. But I just love the fact that you go to this outhouse and the person inside is so terrified by the zone around them that they won't come out, that they basically slip you things under the door, you know, quest information under the door. I think it's just hilarious, honestly.
I know what you mean. I also think it's interesting, and one of those clever bits of construction on Blizzard's part, that you know the guy, the archaeologist in the outhouse, who's been trapped there while, you know, hiding from the bad guys, or perhaps while doing something completely unrelated, is the same person as Bera mentioned in her view of the Alliance. So basically, the Horde interaction with that character is different than the Alliance interaction with that character, even though it's the same person, it's the same character in that outhouse. So from one point of view, you're trying to help, you know, an archaeologist who's on your side. From the other point of view, you're just trying to help some guy who you can't really identify, who seems to have an urgent, pressing need for lots of silk cloth for some reason that I won't go into. So you know, from that, here's a little quest of how can we make the quests here relevant to both sides. That I think is a clever little twist on the part of the builders at Blizzard to take, you know, to kind of advantage of that little detail in the zone, from, you know, both coming and going, as it were. And yeah, that could have been said better, but what the heck.
I think it was said perfectly.
I'm going to leave that in deliberately, just to see. Yeah, you're right. Clearly, there's no way to talk about the zone almost without talking about the outhouse quest. Just because it is fun. Certainly on the Horde side, it's just fun because it doesn't really have any significance or consequence. It doesn't lead into loads of running around in the way that as Bayer said, it can on the Alliance side. At the worst, you're going to have to spend some time farming silk cloth if you want to do that quest. But there's loads that drops from the mobs in the cauldron anyway. So really, it's just a nice little fun extra as far as the Horde is concerned.
I think this does raise an interesting point in Berea talking about the quest that this guy gives you on the Alliance side, where it allows you to open up a gate. These are kind of hard zones to get to physically.
Yeah.
Both of them. You know, they're difficult to find the entrances to. And on the Alliance side, apparently you're totally locked out of this zone. Or not totally out, I'm sorry. You're totally locked out of the easy way to get to and from this zone.
Yes.
Right away.
That's
kind of an interesting design thing too, where I wonder if they did that to keep players who weren't of the proper level from randomly wandering in and getting slaughtered, or I mean, I wonder what the design idea was behind that, because both this zone and the Burning Steps are both, like I said, very hard zones to find the entrances to.
Yeah, I mean, Velvet made exactly that point on the forum. Velvet's point of view was, for a very long time, I never even knew how to get to Searing Gorge. I always assumed the only way into Searing Gorge was through that locked gate between Searing Gorge and Loch Moden, to which I never had a key. My only ventures into the Badlands as Alliance were to run Alderman, so I never really explored it. Only when I expressed interest in raiding with my friend's raiding guild did I get shown a way into Searing Gorge from the Burning Steps through Blackrock Mountain. Which is quote-unquote the wrong way of getting to it, because Burning Steps obviously is the higher level, and in theory you'd go through Searing Gorge to Burning Steps. But yeah, I know exactly what Velvet's talking about there. I mean, that the land route from the Badlands near Kargath into Searing Gorge is incredibly difficult to spot if you don't know it's there. There really is no real indication that there's a way through, and certainly not that it's a way through into a different zone. It looks a little bit like a path up into the mountains that can ring the Badlands. So it is very, very difficult to get to. And so in some ways, it's almost one of those zones where, unless you had a specific reason to go to it, it would probably be very easy to bypass. Or at the very least, if not to bypass, not to get to until... You know,
you
some
absolutely
point
had to.
Well, until you had to, or until you went, you know, it was kind of almost past the point where you really needed to be there, because actually what you were doing by that stage was trying to get to Blackrock Mountain or wanting to get through to the Burning Steps. I think you could possibly very easily end up bypassing it just because of its inaccessibility, which I think would be a pity, because I really, really like questing in the zone, and I've been questing in there, you know, a lot recently. And finding it, you know, kind of fun and challenging, and one of those zones where you have to be a little bit careful, not because necessarily the monsters are particularly higher level than you if you're at the right sort of range to be there, but more because it's very easy to go, you know, to end up in between several groups of them, especially if you go into the underground area and find yourself, you know, running away from one lot to run straight into another and then suddenly being completely outnumbered and overwhelmed. And that is one of those features of the zone that questing through it at level, I think, gives it a real sense of danger that goes with the whole atmosphere and the landscape and the feel of it, making you feel like this is a dangerous place as well.
Okay, so you're talking about the underground stuff, and Salvatore on the board talks a lot about the underground stuff, the mining wine shafts, the winding mine shafts, a barracks cut out of the rock, underground dinosaurs. He says, what's not to love? I have to admit, I have not spent a lot of time on the underground portion of this zone, and maybe there's this whole world underneath there that I'm not aware of.
It sounds like there probably is. No, I think the underground parts of Searing Gorge are, well, certainly I think they're way more interesting than what is above ground. But also I think there's a lot of fun to be had in them. I mean, they are, by any measure, incredibly extensive and can be quite hard to navigate. There's a few different ways in. You can drop down from above at the slag pit, and that can kill you anyway if you're not careful. There's, you know, you have to be kind of jump to ledges on the way down, and if you miss them, then that's going to get messy, very messy, very quickly. And then, you know, you can go down the path into the cauldron and then climb up onto what I have to say is the most impressive bit of construction to connote, you know, that this whole area is being used as a huge mine. It's by far the most impressive bit of kind of mining construction in the entire game. And when you get into it, you know there's several ways into the rock face itself, into the tunnels. If you go in at one level, you'll find yourself going through a very deep, dark, but wide open area where there are miners, and where you can wander around quite a long time just on on the lowest level before you find your way up to the more populated, the more constructed, I guess, areas. If you go in at a different level, you can find yourself straight into effectively the dormitory level for the dwarves, which there's a couple of great quests that take you there, which I'll mention in a second. If you go in a different way, and honestly, this one, There's this quest that you pick up at Thorium Point called Incendisaurs, more like whatever are the saws or something like that. It's a very weird quest name. I'm not really sure what exactly they were trying to achieve with that. But you get this quest to kill 20 Incendisaurs, which are kind of fire living dinosaurs. And you're told that they're kind of somewhere down in the cauldron. And you go, and honestly, I think I had quested through this place five or maybe six times, and I'd had this quest every time, and I just ended up abandoning it because I had never found the way that you went in and then went down and went round and kind of, you know, over a bit of a hump, and then there, all of a sudden, there's lava all over the place and here are these dinosaurs, and they're just all by themselves in a whole significantly sized part of these underground chambers that you just would, you know, you can really easily miss. So there's all this stuff going on. It's on
I've never seen an Incendisaur.
Yeah, well, that nor had I for a very long time. And every time I went, I thought, I know they're here somewhere. I'm going to find them. And then I'm not sure what it was that happened that caused me finally to stumble on the right route, or whether I was with somebody who was, you know, going in the right way, or what it was. But for some reason, I suddenly discovered them, and now I know how to get there, and it's fine. But for the first few times, there was just no way I was going to be able to get these things, because I just simply could not work out how to get there. It wasn't even like I could work out how to, you know, I knew how to get there, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't, you know, find the way. I couldn't do the, you know, the clever trick of jumping over this and going around, or any of those kind of things that sometimes get you into the kind of the hidden, out of the way parts of the world. I simply couldn't work out where.
You didn't even know where there was.
No, exactly. I couldn't, and I couldn't understand how. I thought I'd mapped in my head all of this space quite well, and I couldn't work out where there could be an area where there could be dinosaurs, let alone 20 of them that you have to kill for the quest. And actually, you get down there and there's well more than 20. So I think that whole area, and the quest I was going to mention in particular, there's a wonderful quest against the Dark Iron Dwarves. which is called Kill 'em with Sleep Deprivation, which again you pick up at Thorium Point. And to complete this quest, what you have to do is you have to go in and steal pillows from, or pillars as they're called, from the from that dormitory area I mentioned just now. Which on the one hand is perfectly straightforward. You go in, it's a long, narrow area. There's a few mobs along the way that you'll probably have to deal with. But they're just, you know, items that you can interact with on the kind of the bunk beds cut into the walls on both sides of this space. So on the one hand, it's just another, you know, go and gather quest. But the thing that complicates matters is that sometimes, not all the time, and I've never quite worked out what it is that governs her being there is this elite NPC called Chambermaid Pillar Clencher, who is you know, if she's there when you're there, you could be in quite a lot of trouble. And equally, every now and then, a little wave of sleepy Dark Iron Dwarves will come running in, and you get about 15 of them at a time. So until you spot that actually they've got barely any health, you the first thing you do is you just run away as fast as you can, because you think you're about to get hit by 15. You know, at level mobs, actually, they're very, very easy. But in the meantime, Chambermaid Pillar Clencher is in no way easy to deal with. She is elite. She's got a knockback that will send you half a mile back into, if you're really unlucky, as I was about a week ago, into other mobs, you know, other Dark Iron Dwarves that are not sleepy and are quite tough. And before you know it, you're dead, because she is hard as nails, frankly. And brilliantly, as she is doing this, she will make, now, family-friendly podcast, she will make passing reference to her pillars. That's all I'm going to say. But it does make it quite funny. But yeah, she's just one of those, who the hell thought of her, and why is she in my way, kind of NPCs that you come across every now and then. So yeah, I do. I having gone on at great length about it, it's probably become very clear that I really do like that underground area in Searing Gorge.
Velvet mentioned that quest in the notes, and I didn't realize that quest actually, it seems like you kill her and you can loot her pillow, which is like an object there.
Yes.
And it's kind of a cool trinket. It just gives you a 10-second slow fall, which is kind of just a neat little, you know, very situational, obviously. But I like that. I like the stuff in the game that's like that, the very situational, kind of more goofy than anything. Quest results, and it sounds like that entire little area is sort of that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Chambermaid Pillar Clencher's pillow is quite funny. Obviously, the idea behind it is that it's a pillow that softens your fall,
right,
which is why it gives you the slow fall effect. But that whole little community that lives under there, you know, I mean, it feels a little bit like actually a dwarven city. It's a bit kind of Mines of Moria-ish, I guess, in one respect, but mostly it just feels like it's a proper mining, working community where there are, you know, slave miners, and there are taskmasters, and there are overseers, and there is the chambermaid, and there are, you know, places to sleep and places to work, and it feels oddly, for, you know, yet another bit of dwarf activity in a fantasy game, it feels kind of authentic to me. It feels like you're really going into something that's working, that is there when I'm not there. And obviously sometimes in the game you just kind of think, well, you know, this is only real because I'm interacting with it. But in a weird sort of sense, this to me feels like it just,
it's not just there
on going.
Benefit.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I'm sure other people, your mileage may vary, let's put it that way. And you know, I think mostly the other things that tend to dominate people's views of Searing Gorge are, you know, the there are a few specific things that will, I guess, colour people's associations with it. One of them is that come Christmas, or, you know, the kind of the Winter Vale, as it is in the game, Searing Gorge is one of the places where you might have to come to in order to rescue the reindeer.
That's right.
Which is kind of, it is one of those odd moments where you think, why in the middle of the winter festival are they sending me to this, you know, this
the least winter-like.
Exactly. I mean, at least going and dealing with the Grinch and stuff, you can understand, oh, right, fine, I'm in the snow here. But yeah, I suppose it's one of those, you know, last place anybody would look kind of things. But yeah, obviously that's one of the things that could bring people to the area if they weren't, or if they haven't quested here. And again, in some ways, it's also useful just because there is a flight path that is part of that chain that connects the top of the Eastern Kingdoms with the bottom of the Eastern Kingdoms for the Horde, in a way that, you know, the Alliance don't really need to worry about because of the network they've got around it. So that, you know, that's in a lot of ways, for all that I really, really like it, and I could probably talk for another 15 minutes if you let me about all the great fun stuff to do underground in Searing Gorge. I don't know that there's and based on what people said in the thread, I don't know that there's a huge amount to say specific to it that isn't also part of our view of the, you know, these two zones and Blackrock Mountain together. So maybe it's worth talking about Burning Steps and then kind of bringing it all together.
All right. So Gafoni now has for us a little bit of information about Burning Steps.
Bleaker even than its neighbour to the north, Burning Steps is a ravaged land, incapable now of supporting a single permanent Horde or Alliance settlement, despite the obvious traces of previous inhabitants. The towering peak of Blackrock looms over a landscape of shattered monuments and unholy altars. Even the most experienced adventurer should be wary here, where demons, dragons, and the region's old ghosts vie for supremacy.
It is interesting that, you know, we are here talking about Burning Steps and Searing Gorge and Blackrock Mountain and all of that stuff as if it is one big zone. But in actual fact, from my point of view, they're very different in one key regard, which is I don't think I've ever voluntarily, i.e. other than for the purposes of this series, quested at level in Burning Steps. I've always managed to either, you know, deliberately avoid it, or because I've been sent somewhere else on a quest chain, I've ended up covering the relevant levels somewhere else. And I clearly I'm not the only one, because looking at the thread, Lakis has said, remember when I compared these areas to an epic D&D dungeon crawl? This is the point where the dungeon master says screw it and goes for that total party kill. I actually had to grab Lakis and go there to explore it before writing this, because I never go here at level. Never. It's possibly one of the most terrifying areas in the game. The entire zone has a feeling of you're about to die, and it's not going to be pretty. It really feels as if the bad guys have won here. Now, I'm not sure to what extent that might have influenced my general sense of that's not really a zone I'm particularly bothered about leveling in, or if it's more to do with, as I said, just the kind of mechanics of the game taking me elsewhere.
Even now, even though I could probably one-hit just about everything in here, it seems like a very, very dangerous zone. And I can imagine, especially during vanilla, it would be amazingly intimidating.
Yeah. Well, it's got a lot of... I'm trying to think of the right word. It's got a lot of kind of atmosphere detail, colour detail, for want of a better word, that is actually clearly designed to give it an intimidating feel. At various points around the place, there are dragon skulls on great big spikes.
Right.
Now, you know,
which makes you wonder who put them on the spikes.
Yeah, exactly. One, who killed the dragon? Two, how did they get them on those great big spikes?
Yeah.
You know, that by itself is clearly designed to tell you this is not safe territory. There are bad things going on here. And the fact that, you know, that each of those kind of dragon skulls on a spike seems to be at the heart of some sort of a ritual circle in a fire and all that kind of thing. But, you know, you start to get a bit of a sense that this is not necessarily the lands in which I am meant to dwell.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that is effective. I mean, beyond anything else, you have to say that's effective. Because when you start to see, you know, so it's not quite on the scale of, you know, Onyxia's head on a spike in the gate of Orgrimmar. But in a sense, it almost feels worse because...
Yeah, I was going to say it's worse. It seems so casual.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, and there's so many of them. It's like you can kind of run around. And it's like, oh, hell, there's another one. Oh, there's another one.
Like, I decorate with things that you and 40 of your friends couldn't kill by yourselves.
Yeah. I use these things as ornaments.
Yeah. And you're like, absolutely. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it does have those areas like the Ultra Storms and Drakadar where it definitely does not feel, I mean, very few of the high level zones feel particularly warm and fuzzy. I mean, you know, last time we were talking about Silithus, for heaven's sake. But sure. But this one feels particularly unwarm and fuzzy. This one feels like even if you are at a high level, you know, tread warily.
And I wonder if, from a psychological standpoint, I wonder how that affects players wanting to go there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
it's so unwelcoming. They did such a good job in making it seem dangerous and unwelcoming. A lot of times you're like, you know what? I'll go to another planet instead. You know, it feels even, I mean, from a metagame standpoint, it feels like I just don't want to deal with this. You know what I mean? This just seems hard and difficult and dangerous and almost not fun. And I think probably a lot of people avoid this zone because the designers did such a good job at making it seem dangerous that it almost feels not fun, if that makes sense.
I think it makes
perfect sense. This is going to be a lot of effort and a lot of work, and I'm not, you know, and it kind of drives you away from it, even on a kind of a subconscious level.
Yes, I honestly agree with you on all those points. I think there's a combination of reasons why people might not spend a great deal of time here, and one of them is that when you get to it, it feels so unbelievably unwelcoming. Another one is, honestly, it doesn't feel like there is a huge amount to do here. Quest-wise or otherwise. And also, it's another, except in one specific regard, which I will talk about in a second, it's another zone that's actually pretty inaccessible. If to get to it, you've got to get through... If you're coming to it from the north, certainly, you've got to get to it through Blackrock Mountain. And actually, in the first instance, not everybody is necessarily going to realise that you can get across those chains in the middle of Blackrock to get across the middle and across the other side, or spot the way round to it.
It's where World of Warcraft turns into Super Mario Brothers.
Absolutely. And so it's pretty inaccessible. It's not very welcoming in a strict sense of the word. And it doesn't feel like there's a huge amount to do there. Now,
it feels too to me like most of the stuff that is there to do points you towards Blackrock Depths anyway. You know, points you towards Blackrock Mountain. A lot of the quests seem on the efforts of full disclosure, I haven't done a lot of quests here, but it seems most of them pointed you towards the mountain in the first place.
Yes. Yeah, a very large proportion of them do. And, you know, I looked at the stats in terms of what there is to do in the zone, and there are a couple more Alliance quest givers than there are Horde quest givers, so there probably is a little bit more to do on the Alliance side than on the Horde side. But an awful lot of them, in one way, shape, or form, will point you into the mountain and to the instances there. So again, in a sense, it doesn't feel... That reinforces to me that sense that there isn't a huge amount to do in this zone itself. I will, at this point, because I've mentioned it at least twice and possibly even three times already, talk about this point that I want to make about the access to these zones, and specifically to the Burning Steps. Again, from the Alliance point of view, but actually it would apply if you were just an unwary Horde player exploring in the Eastern Kingdoms anyway. There is one very easy way to find the Burning Steps, and that's just to run north, from a path that runs from the middle of Redridge Mountains. And if you do that at the level that you were at in Redridge Mountains, you are going to be one shot so fast it's going to make your head spin. I speak from experience. The very first time I leveled Alliance side, quested through Redridge, found this path that just runs, you know, straightforwardly out of the areas that you quest in anyway, didn't look in any way out of the ordinary. Wonder what's up here. Oh, it looks like it's getting a bit... the atmosphere seems to be changing. Wham! And I was dead. And I didn't even see what had killed me. And I was like, what? And then you look at the thing, I'm like, okay, I seem to be in this thing called Burning Steps now. And then you, depending on exactly how far in you get before you die, you might find yourself at a graveyard in the Burning Steps. So as you run back, you're going to start looking at the landscape around you and thinking, well, this doesn't look like Redridge, which is exactly what I had that experience of. And it is bizarre. We've talked in a few previous shows about how the line between an actually very low-level zone and an actually very high-level zone can be, you know, a very hard one to spot until you cross it and you
until
die.
It's too late.
Exactly.
Right.
And this is absolutely one of those. So it's bizarre that in so many ways the whole Searing Gorge, Blackrock Mountain, Burning Steps, you know, complex seems to everybody to be phenomenally hard to find the way into. Yet any old little level 20 can just trot up that path and here they are. Oh, this is the Burning Steps. Fantastic. Found it. Dead.
What happens is tons of players do that early level, and the experience is so traumatizing that they block it out. And so when it's time for them to actually go back there when they're supposed to be there, they can't. They don't. They have no memory of the incident whatsoever.
You could well be right. A couple of other points from the thread. Velvet makes the point that actually the a lot of the dragonkin in Burning Steps used to be elite, and they've been nerfed downwards, which we've talked about on previous shows. Happened a lot in various places around the world, so in some ways Burning Steps used to be even more scary and dangerous than it actually already is, which is almost hard to give credit to. Velvet also makes the point that there are very few quests in Burning Steps that don't lead you into one of the Blackrock Mountain instances, and so the zone was usually home to various farmers, was his experience. Back in the days of Vanilla, it was somewhat common to see gold farmers who stuck out like a sore thumb because they were usually night elf female hunters with some random unnamed cat as a pet, a face-rolled gibberish name, and a terrible gear.
Was that common?
Yeah, it was, actually. I remember the days of, in various zones, seeing what were very obviously bot characters running around, always hunters. If you could work out that it was one, it was actually sometimes quite easy to take advantage of them, because by very, very careful timing of when you tapped a mob, you could get the hunter bot and pet to kill the thing, and then you could loot it, which was always quite fun and used to make me think it must have been very frustrating to whoever was running the thing to come back and not be able to work out why half the gold that they really ought to have by now didn't seem to be in its bags. But yeah, not necessarily in Burning Steps, because as I said, I never really leveled there, but there were other zones where you would certainly see that kind of thing. Way less so now, I guess, because an awful lot of people who are trying to get gold are basically, you know, hacking accounts and doing it that way.
They have more efficient ways of doing it now, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, once upon a time, you quite frequently in various zones see that kind of thing going on. Anyway, Velvet goes on to say, these days the reasons to travel to Burning Steps are few. You can pick up, now this is something I was going to mention, you can pick up two quests for Blackrock Spire that reward the Smolderweb Hatchling and the Warg Pup companion pets, both of which, I have to say, are awesomely cute. Even though one of them is a spider, which sounds somewhat counterintuitive.
It's an adorable spider.
It's an adorable spider. And the warg pup is just, it just looks like a little warg and is really, really cute. And yeah, I remember going here at way past level, probably at level 80 actually, when I was just on a mad, you know, collect pet hunt. And going and picking up those two quests and going into Blackrock specifically to get the quests and get the things that will give me the rewards. And not even really particularly bothering very much about the instances. So I have a strong feeling that there are some parts of the Blackrock instances that I have actually never done on any of my characters. But yeah, so that was Velvet's comment about reasons to go to to Burning Steps. Gurlope made the point that of agreeing with some of the previous comments about this area. I start to venture in here a little too low level, and it feels like death waits around every rock. It is a very dangerous run to get to the flight point. That being said, I always do the quests to kill ogres on the mountain in the southeast section, which is Dune Maul Mound, I think it is. There is something about slaughtering ogres that I enjoy. Maybe it's the thud they make when they hit the ground. Which is kind of, yeah, I can sort of see that.
I like it when people find joy in the little things.
I know, it's the details. The devil is in the details. And Salvatore's view was that most of Salvatore's memories of Burning Steps have to do with quests that take you into Blackrock instances. I'm detecting a distinct theme here.
Right.
Like how frustrating it was when your well-intentioned healer cleansed away Mother Smolderweb's poison in LBRS, destroying yet another chance to get your hands on Ragged John's never-ending cup. Now, I have to say, none of that means anything to me.
I don't know what any of that means. I've never heard of Ragged John's never-ending cup. I'm on WoW Wiki right now.
Yeah, I know, we need to know. Inquiring minds need to know. All the long quest chain I endured at level 60, wherein Tinky Steamboil had me running in and out of several dungeons just to get my Dancing Silver, which was the pinnacle of mana regen staves at the time. But overall, a fun zone if you can duck all the dragons and ogres you meet along the way. Now, that's the first time I've seen anyone use the word fun of Burning Steps. As a zone, I think it's awe-inspiring. It's awesome in the literal sense of the word. It is awe-inspiring. It is daunting. It's challenging. It has a feel of unrelenting doom, Everywhere you go, you know, the ruins of Thorisin are crawling with great big golems, and the Black Rock dwarves are there as well, and have just overrun the place. Everything feels as though there are dragons all over the place. And as a zone, it feels incredibly atmospheric, but also weirdly, literally empty, and also empty of a great deal to do. And I think that's a bit of a pity when it's such a high-level zone. You'd think the challenges would be more than just based in the mobs that happen to be hanging around there.
Well, tiny spoiler, I think it's getting a facelift come Cataclysm, so maybe they'll do a little bit more to make it interesting,
yes,
for lack of a better word.
Or even just different. I know. And of the many zones that I think could do with a facelift, that would be one of them. And another one is one that we'll be talking about next time, which is Azshara, which is also getting a massive facelift. Anyway, but we won't dwell on the future. Is there anything else that you wanted to say about Burning Steps? Should we start talking about Blackrock Mountain? On to Blackrock Mountain.
Blackrock Mountain is a place, actually, when I was leveling Crashing, I ended up spending a lot of time, because I leveled him mostly through the looking for group dungeon tool.
Uh-huh.
And you get put in Blackrock Depths, Blackrock Spire, Upper Blackrock Spire a lot, actually, when you're doing it that way. And it's just a massive, massive, massive zone. Or I guess it's not one zone, it's really three zones, but it feels like one zone. I mean, it's just, you go into the middle, when you finally get to the center of Blackrock Mountain, and it's just this gigantic lava pit, basically, with the structure built over it and these giant chains. First of all, I don't know how anyone ever found the entrances to the instances in this area, because it's just, they're hidden. I mean, you got to climb on a chain, which is something you never had to do anything like that before, run across the chain. It's like a... someone actually mentioned it. I can't find it in the notes now, and they're absolutely right. It's like Super Mario. They didn't say that. That's my term. But it's like a jumping, running around, jumping over platformers. It's a platform game all of a sudden to get around this area of the zone.
Yeah.
It's very cool, though. It really is. You get into the instances, you know, the Blackrock Depths, Lower Blackrock Spire, Upper Blackrock Spire, and they're very, very well-designed, very, very interesting zones. They're just huge.
They're crazy huge.
Yeah, Blackrock Depths, you could spend years in. It seemed like I did, honestly. You just wander and keep going and keep going and keep going, and it's like it's never going to end. Very cool architecture, you know, very cool design. Not sure why you would build a city basically in the middle of a volcano, but whatever. I mean, I guess if you're a fire elemental and you're courting the fire elementals, that's the kind of thing you go for. But just a gigantic, gigantic zone. Lots of kind of interesting quests, lots of interesting things to do, but so big. And I think it was interesting because Lactheris kept making Dungeons & Dragons references as to these zones.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's really the case. And honestly, this is kind of my feeling, especially after having done so many of the vanilla zones, the instances. You can tell, I think, in vanilla WoW, how heavily influenced the designers were at the time by two things. Obviously, Dungeons & Dragons and EverQuest. EverQuest was heavily influenced by Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, the first one here, the first EverQuest. You know, basically, it was Brad McQuaid, who was the designer of EverQuest, made the entire world based on his Dungeons & Dragons campaign. And you can tell, especially when it comes to instances, that EverQuest was very successful, and you could tell that the WoW designers, they've since moved on from this, but the WoW designers were heavily influenced by the EverQuest dungeons, because your early WoW instances are gigantic. They really are. They're kind of sprawling.
Oh, yeah.
Very much in the same way the original EverQuest instances were. Now, what the WoW guys came to later on was that the dungeons didn't need to be that big. You kind of needed to have them a little bit more streamlined. That actually makes them more fun. The EverQuest dungeons were huge because there were no instances. Basically, everybody who wanted to go to the Estate of Unrest, which was a zone in the original EverQuest, the dungeon zone, were there at the same time. So you could have 100 people there at the same time, and it wouldn't matter, all fighting over the same mobs. And so they made the zones huge to kind of spread the people out a little bit, which worked if you were going to go in and just camp an area, but doesn't work as well, I don't feel, if the dungeons have a specific purpose, which all of the vanilla WoW dungeons really do. I'm not saying that makes them any worse or any better, but I mean, I think you can really see this in Blackrock Depths and the two spires, because they're just so big that you can feel lost and it's a little bit overwhelming. And it's great for just going and kind of adventuring, not so great necessarily for a sense of purpose, because it just takes so long to get from the top to the bottom. It it feels like it takes hours to complete the dungeon, if you will. And these days, I think players want to complete the dungeon. So that worked great for a Dungeons & Dragons campaign where it might be spread out over 2 months with you and your buddies meeting once a week. Not so good for an instance, I don't feel.
Yeah, I almost have nothing to add. No, I know what you mean. I think the size and scale of those instances is, to me, actually phenomenally off-putting. Because I didn't really do them at level, I don't really know them. I like you were saying, when you're leveling at the appropriate level, as my guy Batchy has been recently, you do get, if you use the random dungeon finder, you do get thrown in there a lot. I've been in there a couple of times with groups who, just like I, did not know where to go next or what to do next and felt like we were spending half our lives in there. I mean, I literally at one point I thought I was never, ever going to get out of which. And the worst and most worrying thing is I can't even remember which of those dungeons it was, because to me they all blur into one. It was the one with that you go to for Corran Diabrew with the greedy guzzler in.
Yeah, it's Blackrock Depths. Okay. But, I mean, Blackrock Depths, it's level 48 through 60 is the level span of stuff to do in there.
What?
Yeah, so you really feel like you're there forever.
Yeah, and as you say, with the random dungeon finder, you're just going to keep going back forever and ever because that is such a long range of levels to be eligible for it for. A few other people said similar kind of things. Tandoro made me laugh on the forum. Speaking of BRD, I could spend hours ranting about that instance and still be done before an at-level run of it.
which
absolutely made me crack up. And that's now, not even back in the day, where tanks had to draw aggro and CC was mandatory. And every pug you found, they all needed to do the first quest, so most groups just got past the prison and to the first areas of the city before they fell apart. I once spent over 6 hours in there, which is, you know, not unheard of. I've heard other people say that they've spent six or more hours in Blackrock Depths, which feels like that's wrong. It's just wrong.
Yeah, it's just too big. It's funny, on WoW Wiki, actually, there's a flowchart map of Blackrock Depths, and it looks like the design for a B1 bomber. It's so complex. There's so many levels of, you know, go here and around here, you can get through here. Again, I sound like I'm slagging on it, and I sort of am, I guess, because of the size. It's just too big. But there's a lot of really fun things to do in it, in Blackrock Depths. It's just so big that it is overwhelming, and you don't really feel like you're ever accomplishing anything unless you have all day to do it. So,
yeah, completely. And which is, in some ways, it is a pity, because the mountain itself and all the stuff that is there before you go into the instances, which, as you say, can be quite hard to do because the entrances are a little bit hidden, it's another totally awe-inspiring space. That massive, you know, that chamber in the middle with the chains running across to it and the kind of the big vertical column in the middle. That's just, you run in there, and the first time I went in there, I just stopped dead and just gazed around in awe again. It's the most stunning piece of, I was going to say architecture, it's not an architecture, it's a huge great cave, but game architecture, it certainly is some of the most stunning thing. And when I was back in there again recently, I hadn't even spotted before now, there are dragons flying around in that great big chamber. That's how big it is. That's how, you know, daunting you should regard that space as being. And that's
I've probably been in there 15 times, more than that, 20, 30 times. I've never noticed that.
They're flying up, right up near the ceiling. They're just kind of, it's circling, basically. And you know, you can't even, literally, if you mouse over it, you don't even get an indication of it. So it's totally unengageable, uninteractable with. But yeah, it's just, it's in that huge space. There's just dragons. It's like, oh, okay.
Probably because looking up seems so dangerous. I mean, there's so much, you know, your eyes are glued on the ground.
How easy is it to fall off one of those chains or off the ledges and end up in the lava? I mean, really, how easy? That's the worst part about the whole thing. But the other thing that always throws me is there are two meeting stones in that big chamber. There's one on one of the outside walls, and there's one on that column in the middle. And, you know, obviously, one's for the spire and one's for the depths and And that makes sense. But the thing that always throws me is that once you've all, you know, you've assembled at the meeting stone, okay, now where do we go?
Yeah, exactly. You better hope somebody knows where they're going.
Yeah. Generally speaking, all right, there might be a little bit of a remove, but generally speaking, most meeting stones, you get to them and it's fairly clear that the huge grey instance portal just over there in the distance is where you go next. With that place, it's like, do we go up? Do we go down? Do we go around? The doorway that takes you into the doorway that takes you into the entrance that is ultimately going to take you, or the entrances that are going to take you into the two parts of the spire, is actually quite easy to miss. And once you get into it, you've got to, you know, if you turn one way, you find yourself going into a different instance than you intended to go into if you went the other way. And all of that just makes, I mean, it's that whole thing of, it all feels such a challenge just to get to it, and then when you get to it, you feel like your entire, you know, your life essence is draining away into your computer as a consequence of the time you spend in it.
It's a lot of fun when you do it with the tool, with a pickup group, people who've never been there before, and if you have a wipe, I mean, forget it. Like, it's impossible to explain how to get from the graveyard all the way back.
Well, we had exactly that. We had a wipe when I was doing it with a pug when I was leveling just recently, as I said. And in the end, what everybody did was res at the graveyard and then use the dungeon tool to teleport back into the dungeon. But for either because there was a bug or because of some other reason that I'm not sure of, we instead of all being teleported into the same place, we were teleported into different parts of the dungeon. And and the people who were away in the depths of it, like me, were the ones who had absolutely zero idea. Oh, I know what might probably caused it. Somebody dropped group, and then we re-queued, and somebody else joined. And I don't know if it was because as we were all zoning back in or whatever it was, there was that thing where you would, in theory, if you were joining a group that was in an instance that was already in progress, you would zone to where they are.
And also, it could be, too, that I think it splits Blackrock Depths up into three different sections on the Looking for Dungeon group. So it could have just been,
right.
If you guys had progressed on beyond where you officially should have stopped.
Yes. I think that's probably,
who knows where it would have put you.
Well, exactly. It might have put us at the start of the section that it thought we were in, rather than at the start of where we'd actually started. So, yeah, we were just like, talking to each other in party chat, I'm sorry, I literally have no idea where I am or how to find my way to anybody else. And actually, there are some quite nasty-looking mobs quite close by, and if I move, I have a horrible feeling I'm going to be dead again. And it was just awful. I mean, every one of us, we were all trying our best to get back together, and in the end, the whole thing just fell apart because it was taking too much time, and nobody really had the energy or the enthusiasm to try and reassemble this. And whoever it was who joined us in order to run this dungeon must have been unbelievably frustrated, because all they saw for 5 or 10 minutes was just a bunch of people saying, I don't know where I am, where are you? I don't know, where are you? I don't know, where are you? I don't know, ah!
All I see in front of me is lava. That's all I see. Okay, we'll just describe half the zone.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think I know this is all sounding like a bit of a down on the instances in Blackrock Depths, and possibly it's simply because I never have really properly enjoyed them at level, and I've gone back and kind of cleaned them up as afterthoughts. And I do know people who, both now and as I leveled with them through vanilla, you know, absolutely adore those instances. I've got one friend who will run and rerun and rerun Blackrock Depths, you know, at level as he's leveling another character. And much as I, you know, I love him, I think he's absolutely demented. But each to their own would be my my comment at that point. I don't know. I will stop talking, because otherwise it's just going to get even more like a rant.
Yeah. I'm torn. I love the idea of it, if you will. It's just the execution after a while. It just wears on you. And again, that just may be from spending so much time there while leveling. Like I said, 48, from 48 to 60, you got a good chance of being thrown in there. Yeah. It just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. I love that they tried it. Love that, you know, it's sort of it feels like a grand experiment. And I imagine, too, when it was in game, if you will, you know, you got to have something like that sort of at that point, because, you know, they I guess they really wanted something you could spend a lot of time in, because who knows how long you'd be doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's fair. And I will completely concede that as experiences, in the sheer sense of their scale, they feel epic and they feel worthy of something that you've spent a long time, you know, learning your character and leveling your character and building up to. I will totally concede that that's, you know, that's a fair assessment of what they represent. I just personally find that all of that ends up just being a bit of a drag. And the thing I'd ask you actually is because you're obviously kind of more familiar with all of those instances than I am. Part of what I have a problem with is that it's very difficult to feel a sense of progression in them, I think, because they all feel it all the way through. It feels very, very similar. Is that fair, yeah, or am I just not looking at the right
really,
bits?
Honestly, if you work through Black Rock Mountain, at least, and again, I'm sort of like you, where I may be putting Laura Blackrock Spire into this. I may be lumping it in too, because I think they are fairly similar. But as you work through it, does feel like you're working your way through an enemy stronghold. So that's pretty cool. I mean, you know, you got a prison area, you've got the bar kind of general living area, you've got lots of different areas. Again, the problem is it's just so big. It really just does take so long that I think after a while it gets exhausting. And maybe that just speaks more to us as players, you know, kind of. That these days as players we have kind of more of a, you know, boom boom boom, let's get on with it, let's do stuff idea, you know, probably because of the Wrath King dungeons, which are so streamlined and so get in get out, you know, 15-25 minutes, half an hour at the most, and you feel like you've done something, you've done the dungeon, where with Blackrock especially you don't feel like that, honestly. The only reason you feel like you've accomplished anything when you're running Blackrock these days, if you run with the dungeon tool, is because you get the ding and you get your whatever they are now, justice points.
Yeah.
When you hit whatever they have determined is the first third, the second third, and the last third of the dungeon. Yeah. So to be honest, it's hard to say, because I came to Blackrock after I had already done a lot of Wrath King dungeons, and so I'm not sure how that colored my view of it.
Sure. Actually, that's a good point. The other thing that I found very confusing when I was doing the dungeons with at level with the random dungeon tool, is that thing about the fact that actually it's now two or three or however many it is dungeons. Because at one point we killed a boss, and I got the little thing that said, you know, dungeon completed.
Right.
And then the group, this must have been when I was with a group that were more familiar with it, because they just then picked up and started carry on running on. And I was very confused, because I thought I'd finished.
You thought you were done, yeah.
Where? And then all of a sudden they're fighting down an entirely different wing, and a little bit later on I got another dungeon completed. I was like, oh, now I'm worried. How many more of these am I going to get? Anyway, that is, I think, about as much as we have to say about those zones and the area of Blackrock Mountain.
Yeah, the greater Blackrock Mountain metropolitan area.
Yes, the conurbation of Blackrock. It's been, in a sense, this feels like a very kind of short session, and I almost worry that I don't feel like I've given certainly Sir and Gorge sufficient time, but at the same time, because of the way that these zones feel like, you know, they're one big zone, and in a sense, it just feels like we've just spent an hour talking about one big zone rather than 20 minutes each talking about three smaller zones. Which I suppose is kind of fair. It's definitely one of those areas that feels like a coherent whole when you put the two zones and the mountain together right there in the middle of the Eastern Kingdoms. There's a certain sense of progression from one to the next, and therefore you can probably stick in that area for, you know, a good few levels. But it does feel a little bit to me like once you've had the relatively interesting experience of Searing Gorge, that what comes after it is just a little bit of a letdown.
Yeah, it's just kind of more of the same, except not as interesting.
Yeah, and with less to do. But anyway, yeah. So that has been episode 10. There are only, horrifyingly, two more to go, which is just as well, because there's only about two more weeks until Cataclysm hits.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
The next couple of programs are going to be a little bit odd, I guess, because it seems like the new patch, which is going to contain the Shattering, is imminent. So for the next couple of programs, we're sort of going to be talking about zones as they are now, not as they necessarily will be when people are hearing it, which is going to be interesting. And obviously the temptation to talk about the new versions will probably be fairly strong, but we will do our best to stick true to the spirit of the Enterprise and explore the world as we know it now.
As we're recording this, elementals are tearing up Thunder Bluff and Orgrimmar and whatever, the Iron Forge. So, you know, the shattering is coming quickly. Yes.
The world will literally never be the same again. I can't wait, but in the meantime, we've got a few more zones to get through. Next time, we're going to be carrying on this program by program, leapfrog backwards and forward. We're going to be back in Kalimdor. In the northern part of the continent, we're going to be exploring a series of mostly interconnected zones. We're going to be starting in Fellwood and then looking at Azshara, at Winterspring, and also the odd little druid enclave of Moonglade, which is somewhere that's near and dear to my heart, given that I've leveled about 25 druids by now. That's only a little bit of an exaggeration. So, as always, we should say thank you very much indeed to everyone who's contributed to the thread for this programme. Thank you to Gafoni for his little bits and pieces. And also thank you to Beira for hers, especially because I forgot to thank her last time. So I'm very, very sorry. I promise never to do it again. And you set us up royally for today's discussion. So thank you very much indeed. That is it from us. We will be back very, very shortly with episode 11 in those zones that I just mentioned. So from me, it is goodbye.
And for me, it's also goodbye.
And we will see you soon.